Hey, this is Kale. I just want to quickly remind you that this episode has spoilers for Blankets. Plus, we discuss some sensitive topics such as religion and homosexuality. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Matt and Kale Read Comics. Every 2 weeks, Kale and I discuss a different graphic novel. I am Matt Smith. I am a Canadian and British cartoonist and comics educator and filmmaker currently living outside of Glasgow in Scotland.
And I'm Kale Wericke. I'm a former filmmaker, current cosplayer, and a current tech worker in Vancouver, BC.
Yeah, this week, Kale, we're discussing Blankets by Craig Thompson. It's a coming-of-age autobiographical graphic novel. It tells the story of Thompson's childhood in an evangelical Christian household growing up, and his first love. He meets a girl named Raina, and this is the first time he's fallen in love. And it's about his early childhood and dealing with issues of kind of losing his faith and his identity as a Christian and kind of dealing with what that means within his family, within his relationships. Very excited for this episode because, Kale, we are joined by a very special guest. Everyone, please say hello to cartoonist Elaine M. Will. Elaine, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're really excited. We reached out to you, Elaine. I'm a big fan of your work. And we know each other mostly through Mark. Mark introduced us. And I just want to say, of course, congratulations. You and Mark got married very recently over Christmas break. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, you're both awesome. And I really like both of you. So it's really nice seeing awesome people come together. I know you guys have been together for a long time. But, you know, I think it's kind of nice and special to make it official and celebrate that.
Yeah,
so congratulations.
Thank you.
Elaine is an illustrator and cartoonist from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. She holds a BA in illustration from the Arts University at Bournemouth in the UK. She adapted the novel Dust Ship Glory into a graphic novel. She was also the colorist and letterer for The Burning Black, The Legend of Black Shuck, the book that Mark wrote that we discussed on Mark's episode. And it's illustrated by Ryan Howe, who's actually going to be the guest on our next episode. He's going to come on and talk about Batman Mad Love. Elaine is currently working on her next graphic novel, The Last Band on Earth, but she is best known for her acclaimed graphic novel, Look Straight Ahead, a story about mental illness. It was one of the last winners of the Zurich Award, and it was nominated for a Joe Shuster Award in 2011. Big fan of all of your work, Elaine. Dust Ship Glory is great. Look Straight Ahead is amazing. I think there's a lot of connections between Blankets and Look Straight Ahead, but I do want to ask you, you know, we contacted you and said, hey, we'd love to have you on the show. What are some books you might want to talk about? And this was one of the books on your list. Why did you suggest this book, Elaine?
Well, it's always been one of my favorite graphic novels ever since I read it. So, like, when did I read it? Maybe 2006. And yeah, when it came out, it seemed poised to sort of introduce this new age of, you know, graphic novels for adults. Sadly, that didn't really happen.
I first read it a couple years ago. Oh man, actually more than a couple years ago, when I was working at that international school in Tokyo with Josh, who was a guest on a previous episode. And I picked it up for one of the school vacations, and I went to Kyoto and I was riding on the bullet train, and I read it in, I think, one sitting on the ride to Kyoto, the old capital of Japan. And then I read it again a few days later. It was just so amazing, and I just had to read it again. I recently reread it for this episode, and I read it in one sitting, which it's like almost 600 pages. So I think that's, you know, speaks volumes to just how captivating this book is. I love this book. I'm really excited. This is, I hope, you know, a sign of things to come on this podcast, because this is the type of books that I want to get into. It's just, the storytelling is just so powerful, but also I think so unique to comics. I really think it speaks to the power of comics and how you can do certain storytelling things in this medium that you can't achieve in any other medium. I think it is just very literary. It's almost poetic. There's so much stuff I want to talk about with the art that it's not literal. It's very figurative. Kale, I'm sorry, I got really excited talking about this. What's your background connection to this book, Kale?
I actually picked this up randomly at a bookstore in Seattle, maybe 2005. I don't know. It was a long time ago, and I was at that time going through a breakup, and so it was like the perfect like book to read at that time. And this was, you know, I had dated this girl for a long time, and I had like a personal connection to the story because of that. And of course, you know, a lot of the things like the quilt and stuff like that in the book connected to my life as well, with like, you know, when you're in a relationship, you kind of give gifts back and forth. So that's where I have this like kind of emotional connection to the book. And that's why I have like a hard copy of it with me. I mean, from the bookstore to this day, I never got rid of it. And, you know, I've gone through cycles of getting rid of books on my bookshelf, but I've never gotten rid of this book.
Yeah, I do just want to give a little bit of background info. The book was originally published in 2003. And also one of the reasons we scheduled this episode to come out in February is because it is very much about a relationship. So we wanted to, you know, the month of Valentine's Day, we wanted to find books that were related to relationships and romance. But I think it's a very personal story. I think there's lots of very specific details. But what I like about what you said about that quilt, Kale, is that it is a specific detail, but it is so relatable because it is so specific and so honest and true. You know, it made you think of gifts you've exchanged between girlfriends and yourself. It maybe not have been a quilt, but it was something that had this sort of emotional meaning and this kind of larger significance. So that is relatable, the fact that there is this sort of object that can be anything, that is something very personal between lovers, between members in a relationship. And this book is amazing. Kale, I do want to ask, before we go back to Elaine really quick, this is so unlike anything we've covered. This is the first graphic novel we've covered on this podcast where it's one creator. Even The Dark Knight Returns, you know, Frank Miller penciled it and he wrote it, but he had an inker and he had a colorist. This is Craig Thompson. It's all his work. And it's so unlike anything we've done. It's also so unlike anything that I would expect you to read, Kale. So is there anything in particular that, you know, draws you to this book? And I'm really asking because I want to know what other books we can do that are kind of more in this vein.
Sure. What made me pick this book up in the first place? This is from Half Price Books in Seattle. I picked it up because I liked the art, and I, you know, obviously there, as I explained, there was emotional part to it too, because I saw like the couple on the cover. I was like, oh, okay, this is about, you know, someone's relationship. And I don't know, I started just kind of going through the book, and I was just like, I love, you know, the imaginative art, when especially when he Craig is conceptualizing some of the his childhood like memories and things like that. And I just love, you know, like the imaginative nature of the art in the book. And that's what actually drew me to this book. And of course, the story made me like love it even more. But when you first see something, you just have to kind of gauge and visualize, you know, if you're going to actually enjoy something or not. Right. And this was one of those things that I was just like, I think I'm going to enjoy this. And then I just jumped in.
Yeah. And the art is beautiful. The writing is very beautiful. It's very human. Elaine, as a writer artist yourself, I got the impression looking at this that, I don't know, do you think that he worked with a script? Like, it just feels that the writing and art is so organic and so intertwined when I read this. What's your take as a writer-artist, Elaine?
I don't know. I would think probably he had a script for parts of it, but then perhaps some of it he just sort of did thumbnails without a script. Yeah. Because it does feel like, yeah, it does feel like a lot of the more conceptual art, like you were saying, feels like the sort of thing that would be difficult to write as a script, at least the way I do it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some stuff, you know, like, you know, the demons of his nightmares being turned, you know, literal. Like, I'm just flipping through all these wonderful, wonderful images. You know, his dad is making his brother sleep in the cubbyhole, and he's opening the sort of foldaway Zed bed, and the Zed bed is turned into like a crocodile. Okay, you can write that, but can you write that these monsters are filling the edge of the panel? And like, I don't know, is there even a point to writing that, or is that just something you work out on the page? It just seems like so much is just spilling out of him onto the page. And Elaine, do you work in full script? Because I mean, we'll talk a bit more at the end, but Look Straight Ahead, I see a lot of similarities where sort of his emotional state is really visualized and really becoming sort of, you know, bleeding out of the character. Do you work with a script when you do such strong imagery like that?
Well, I work with full scripts now because it's just easier. It was like, yeah, for Look Straight Ahead, there were portions where I didn't really have a script, but it's like, I don't know. it was a lot harder to work that way, and I just sort of realized I need to have a script. I might get to a point where a point in The Last Band on Earth where I want to have more conceptual imagery that I'll just sort of have to do off the cuff. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on my own follow-up graphic novel now, and it's just, I'm really trying to kind of work it out on the page a little bit more. I know the outline is based off of a short story I wrote, so I have the general structure. And like, I am running into roadblocks, but I'm trying to avoid writing a script because I don't want it to impede me, and I don't want it to, you know, it just takes so long to write a script for like such a long work.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that I want to discover on the page, and I wanted to make it a sort of fun exploration. And I feel like that in Blankets. I feel like he is sort of discovering things on the page, and, you know, his brushwork changes from moment to moment or scene to scene. Everything feels very much like it's in the same world, but, you know, when emotions intensify, you know, the brushstroke gets dirtier and messier and less precise. And I just like seeing this raw emotion on the page.
Yeah.
Speaking of the writing, you know, the overall structure, the characterization, all that, Elaine, what's your take on the writing specifically about this book?
It's very good. It's very well structured, well paced and everything. And he makes good use of things like flashbacks or cutaways, I guess. And I guess, like, reading it again, because we maybe wanted to talk a little bit about the more problematic aspects of maybe this work and some of his other work. I feel like maybe it's a little bit unfair to Raina.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, it makes it seem like she just broke his heart and didn't think of him in the way that he thought of her. And, like, maybe she felt like he was forcing her to choose between him and her family. But, like, we don't know that. We're not really told any of that. This is just what I've inferred. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about perspective and different views of characters, because one thing that stood out to me is, you know, this is his story. And I know, because I do a lot of autobiographical stuff, and, like, I really, through trial and error, I really do try to focus it on, like, no, this is my journey, this is my personal experience, and, you know, and just try to make it clear that, like, you know, focusing on me so that I'm not telling anyone else's story. I do a lot of work about me and my wife, Emma, and of course she always gets to look at everything and approve it and is my editor, and if I'm, you know, portraying her in a way that she doesn't feel is honest or true, then that's my chance to change it, because it is her story as well. I'm wrapping her up in my own story. Yeah. I've gotten into problems in the past. I had my Smith versus Smith webcomic, and it was a newspaper strip in my university paper, and I wrote stories about my friends, which I thought were funny, but I included a friend without sharing a story about him first, and I heard from my brother that he saw it and tore it up and ripped up the school newspaper, and I had to do some apologizing. And aww. From then on, I really did try to if it was going to be my story, my platform, I was going to really try to just to make it about me. But what I like about, or what I found interesting about Blankets, is not only does Raina become very much a major character, but her family is given scenes, and there's scenes where Craig as a character is not present.
Yeah.
Which I think that's bold enough to include Raina on her own. You know, maybe they did talk about it. Maybe he had, you know, she said, oh, this is what I'd done. This is where I was when I was on the phone to you, or this is what happened in between our last conversation. So he kind of maybe has an idea, but then he also has scenes of Raina's parents where Raina's not even present. So it just seems very bold for him to imagine these scenes where, one, he's not present. Number two, the person who could have relayed this information isn't present. So this is really like third hand or him just kind of filling in the blanks. I don't know. How'd you feel about that?
I liked that, but again, I felt like we could have been told and shown a lot more about Reyna herself. What do we really know about her? We know that she's creative, like Craig, and that's why they really fell for each other. And we know that she's really close to her family. And like Craig, she has a strong faith. But other than that, I don't really know who she is, I'm going to say.
Kale, how do you feel about the point of view and the perspective in regards to Reyna, but also her family?
Yeah, I agree. I think that this whole book is obviously Craig's point of view on everything, because it is autobiographical. And so his maybe view of Reyna, the circumstances surrounding Reyna, her parents, so and so forth, it's from a kind of a male-centric point of view. And
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out if there is like a way to balance that, especially in an autobiographical book. But yeah, I definitely do feel that. And even, you know, as a male picking up this book back in 2005 when I was going through my own relationship situations, I would say that, like, it was more relatable to me. I don't know how, like, as a female picking up this book and then, like, reading the book, how they would feel, like, you know, Reyna is, you know, if Reyna is more than just an object to kind of, I don't want to say lust after, but, you know, a person to, or a character to lust after. There's no other word I can think of that could fit that.
Well, that, and he even has scenes where he is worried about portraying her that way, and yet he still kind of does it. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I think that Reyna is kind of... The character of Reyna is how Craig, the character, sees her, and Craig, the artist, the cartoonist, sees her.
Yeah.
I do think that she is a bit of a blank slate because he is this young kid who's never had a pretty girl smile at him, never had a pretty girl, you know, cuddle up with him under a blanket. And so he's projecting all of his hopes and everything he's ever expected of love and romance onto this girl who does have her own inner life, but he can't see that. I think that's kind of built into the story. And I relate to that, you know, so many times when you first meet someone, or, you know, even if you've known someone for a long time, you still have this vision of them that might not be completely who they are. And I think it would be, I think he already goes too far and shows too much of the other side. I think if you pulled it back a little bit, I think it'd be a bit more forgivable and maybe a bit more towards the impression that I got is that this is how this, you know, young teenage idiot in love sees this girl as the perfect person. And, you know, he gets way too invested and she does care for him, but she kind of pulls back at the end and realizes that they are just kind of young teenagers and they've got, you know, their whole lives to, you know, and they live so far away and it's just not realistic.
It's a long distance relationship. So it may have even been like she met somebody else closer to her because she's popular at school. So probably that is what happened.
But even that, you're noticing, you said before, like, oh, they connected because they were both artists, but they aren't really that similar. Like, he is very much an outsider and he does feel kind of a bit of a loner. And then he meets this girl and she sees something in him. And that's what really drives his sort of fascination with her. But she is different. She is popular. She does get invited to parties. She takes him to school and, you know, she likes to cut class and hang out with the kids that he would never associate with him. And then he gets dragged to this party where he just feels he's not part of her world and doesn't. And I think that scene is when he's starting to realize that he doesn't really know what her world is. So I think it is really, I don't know. It's interesting because it's written by a 30-something-year-old man trying to go back and remember and reflect on what it was like as a, I can't remember how old exactly he is, like 17-year-old boy. But I think there is this level, and I don't know if either of you agree with me, but it feels to me like there is this sort of detachment of like, oh man, I was a bit of an idiot back then. And I didn't realize that she did have an inner life that I wasn't seeing, or she did have other problems that I wasn't aware of. And maybe that is why he includes those scenes with her parents, because the parents are having problems. Her parents are going through a separation and a divorce. But they've also got these two adopted children that have handicaps, and it's a real struggle for the entire family. And maybe this is him as a 30-year-old looking back and saying, oh my gosh, I didn't realize or I didn't even think about how much she was having to deal with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that really quick, reading Carnet de Voyage, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is his journal of while he was promoting blankets. And he still is, even though he's in his 30s at this point, he still is dealing with a breakup and still acting very much like this kind of 17-year-old boy. So maybe he doesn't have as much perspective as I'm projecting onto him now.
I also interpreted Reina going through a similar journey with her faith. And maybe that's also one of the reasons why she had to distance herself from Craig. So including, of course, any family stress from, of course, the divorce and that, you know, having, she's probably questioning things like, you know, are our relationships viable, you know, long-term relationships. And then there are also, you know, factors, of course, like the adopted children. But I think there was a lot of context that's missing as to why she distanced herself. So maybe that's something that, that's something that also would have helped color in, you know, the characters. But then again, it's also Craig's point of view, so yeah, he wouldn't have known any of that stuff anyway.
Which, I don't know, I think that's almost more true. Like, do you really see? I mean, sometimes you do, but I mean, very often in breakups, you are kind of blindsided and you are just like, whoa, like we had a date last weekend. I thought everything was cool. And now you're telling me you've had all these doubts and you've kept hidden. I don't know. The graphic novel that I'm working on now is very much about a dissolving relationship that I had. And I am trying to write both sides. And the more I do that, I'm afraid of, you know, claiming her story and telling her story for her. So I think I'm moving further and further away from strict autobiography. And I think I'm going to preface the whole book with, like, this was inspired by, sort of. But I am trying to, you know, it is a bit of therapy as well, just kind of work out, like, you know, where did it all kind of go wrong? But I do feel that, you know, it is a long distance relationship. Craig wouldn't know what was going on her end of the phone that was causing her to drift apart. And what was it that finally said that, you know, what brought her to the place where she said enough was enough? So I don't know. I think maybe the problem is that we get glimpses, but I guess that would be true. I don't know.
I guess all of that does make it seem more real. And there is, like, that is the pitfalls of doing an autobiographical story. It is all about you and less about the other people in the story. Like, I don't know if either of you have ever read the book Running with Scissors by Augustine Burroughs, but...
No, I'm writing it down, though.
It's not a graphic novel. So anyway, the author's family actually pursued legal action against him because they didn't like the way they were portrayed in the book.
Oh, the author's family. Not even someone... Oh, man. Yeah, it's just, you gotta, I don't know, Kale shows up in my comics as Kale, but I got his permission, and, you know, he hasn't appeared in many of my comics lately, and not because we're not close and not friends, but just because I am just more aware of, you know, this is my journey, and I wouldn't want to tell Kale's side of it without really involving him. Just how to depict yourself literally and how to portray yourself, that's an interesting conundrum to have. I've been drawing my kind of cartoony avatar for years now. So, like, I kind of just think of, you know, myself in the comic world through this image, but it is a very kind of simplistic, kind of pared down sort of cartoony vision that I hope people can project a bit more on, but, like, struggling with how do I make myself appear on the page. Elaine, are you a fan of Seth, the Canadian cartoonist?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay. I've heard him speak. I love him. He's one of my favorite cartoonists, but I heard him speak, and the reason they kind of moved away from autobio is, okay, you show a story and then people say, well, you're making yourself look better than you really are. And then he said, well, then if you make yourself look worse, that still is a little egotistical, like, you know, that there is still this, you can't get away from this ego.
Yeah. And whenever I used to draw myself, I would often make myself look worse than I actually do. And like people would see that and be like, well, why do you draw yourself so ugly? So I probably need to, if I ever do actually do an autobio story, come up with some sort of avatar for myself, or even like draw myself as an animal, like Craig Thompson drew himself as a turtle in Chunky Rice.
Yeah.
Oh, was that turtle a one-to-one?
Apparently that's him, yeah. Oh. So I wonder if Chunky Rice is actually this same story.
Oh, I haven't read Chunky Rice in a while. That was his first graphic novel, but it's all cutesy animals.
Yeah.
And it's nice and all, and it, like, the art is really beautiful, but I didn't connect to it.
Me neither. Yeah.
And I think that's because there is this sort of, I don't know, it feels like that's too safe, and not to you know, to shoot down your idea of drawing yourself as an animal avatar, but there is something, it's terrifying to say, hey, this is my true life. This is the story of my first love. This is me getting my heart crushed for the first time.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much imagery that I want to talk about. Like, and I don't even know how without just going through a list of my favorite images, but it just, there's so many times where the art is just kind of escaping him and just sort of spooling out of his pen, out of his hands. There's a time where like he's really trying to stop drawing and he burns all of his drawings, and then he's like kneeling on the ground and his head is tilted back, and like the art is escaping him like demons being exorcised. And I just love this imagery of this art is just, you know, it's him bleeding on the page. Is that what drawing is like for you, Elaine? Like, drawing for me is just a chore and a hassle, and I hate it the whole time. But I know and Craig Thompson talks about how it's almost a religious experience for him. What is drawing like for you?
There are times when it's like that for me, when it's just like, I just get lost in it. Yeah. And it feels like sort of an exorcism if it's really like emotional art. I haven't done a lot of art like that since Look Straight Ahead. But yeah, I really enjoy the feeling of being lost in it, like almost like some higher power is guiding my hand. Like maybe Craig Thompson also felt that way. I don't know.
I'm jealous. I always feel like it's such a battle.
Well, yeah, most of the time. It's a paradox. Like, it's my one reason for living, and yet it's also the source of a lot of my anxieties too.
For sure. But it's also the way you work out those anxieties, at least for me. But it's causing you anxiety, but it's how you work through it. I just had a phone call with a friend. I showed him some pages for this book I'm working on, and he's like, every time I give you a suggestion, it seems like you're really upset. And I was like, well, you're making me write more and draw more. I hate writing and drawing. He's like, why are you a cartoonist? I said, well, I like having a finished comic.
I like having made art. I don't always like the act of making it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why conventions are so much fun, because you're like, hey, I made this. This is a finished thing. Look what I did.
Yes, yeah. And nobody sees what went into it.
No. Kale, the first time you and I met, we were at film school and we had to do like a little introduction, like this is, you know, three fun facts about myself, whatever. And you said, oh, I used to want to be a comic book artist and now I want to be a filmmaker. And I was like, that guy is so cool.
It's true.
I know you're not drawing so much anymore, but like when you were drawing, how did it feel for you? Like, I feel to me like it's like this myth of the runner's high that everyone talks about, like how drawing is this transcendent experience and running, mm-hmm. you get to the point where you get this runner's high, and I've never felt that. And I'm always just thinking everyone's just full of crap. But Kale, what is drawing like for you?
Well, for you, I think because you are trying to draw content for, you know, like, for deadlines or to meet like some kind of, you know, perceived deadline, maybe that's why you don't enjoy it as much. But for me, I used to draw things just for, you know, the joy of it. And your brain is like in this state where you're just like letting the pencil do its thing. And then you just draw and, you know, you don't quite care about the end result as much. And then you just like, you produce something, and it feels so good to do that. It's been a while since I've been able to do that because, when I draw now, I'm so critical of what I'm drawing that I'm like, oh, that doesn't look right. That, you know, I don't let the pencil do its thing anymore.
I do encourage that in my lessons. I mentioned on the podcast that I teach comics making lessons, and I really do push the students to be like, okay, just get the idea down. Just get the emotion across. Just draw big cartoony characters because then your reader connects to those characters, and don't worry about making it perfect. Just the fact that you finish this page, that's enough to celebrate. And I feel sometimes, I don't know, just a little bit disingenuous, because when it comes to my own work, I'm like, no, this has to look the way that I want it in my head. And it's not about just being fun and free on the page. Like, it's got to, I know what it's supposed to look like in my head. But I wish that I can kind of embrace what I preach and practice what I preach. But, you know, when you do find those moments of just fun and play. But I think I have a problem too. I know I have a problem where I have to turn my hobbies into, there has to be some end result. There has to be something, you know. Yeah. I can't even be a comics fan and a comics reader without, you know, turning it into a podcast. Again, this book, Carnet de Voyage, which is really kind of a really nice sort of companion piece to Blankets. The whole time his hand is in agony and pain, and his hand is really hurt from drawing this book and then going on tour and signing autographs and doing sketches and books. And he just complains so much. And he's got this lovely image of his hand being stabbed with the pen, and the art is really just like, you know, almost giving him stigmata, and it's just how much he's suffering for this art. And so even someone who loves it and enjoys it, it kills and wrecks your body.
Yeah. And like, reading that made me wonder, how is he still drawing to this day? Because that book was a long time ago. So,
well, yeah. And then he followed it up with Habibi, which is,
yeah,
I think, even bigger than Blankets, which is 600 pages. Habibi is massive, massive book. Yeah. It's so heavy. One thing I do want to ask the two of you, there's a bit of an epilogue to this. So most of it takes place in his childhood and his early adolescence or late adolescence. But Elaine mentioned, you know, it is kind of nonlinear. It does, you know, flash back to him as a kid with his brother, then continuing the forward momentum of the story with Reyna. But then it does do quite a large time jump to where he's an adult and Reyna dumps him. He burns all of his drawings of Reyna. He kind of moves on. And then we see him years later as an adult. He doesn't live at home. He's talking with his brother about how it kind of reframes the whole book as this is his kind of coming out as a non-Christian to his family. We get a little bit of like what's happened to his brother in the time since then. But how did you feel about this epilogue, Elaine?
Yeah, I thought it was a really nice end to the story. And yeah, the conclusion of his story of kind of struggling with his faith. And it's also, interesting how it takes place in a museum, which is a place of science, which some people like to frame as the enemy of religion.
Which I'm just flipping back through which scene is it that, takes place in the church, in the museum?
Isn't there his brother's wedding? Don't they have that?
The reception. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting that the setting is, yeah, kind of this polar opposite in, you know, in some opinions to the church. Yeah,
and then another thing, I guess maybe this isn't part of the whole epilogue, but the fact that it ends with the winter and the snow coming back, mm-hmm. which, again, for most stories is used as a symbol for, you know, heading into the darkness of winter and sort of a metaphor for depression oftentimes. Here it's like, it's a symbol of happiness. Everything's going to be okay. And, that's really interesting because in, Christianity, spring is like the period of rebirth and new life.
Yeah, for me, I see the winter as very much a bookend. You know, it starts in winter under blankets of snow. That's like the title. There's quilts, there's blankets that he hides under with his brother, and they sleep together and they share a bed when they're younger. She knits a quilt for him, or quilts a quilt. But also the blankets of snow. So for me, I didn't think about this being cold, dark winter, but it is sort of just a bookend.
Yeah, it's a subversion of the usual symbolism of snow and winter. And yeah, it's a comfort. The snow is a comforting blanket because I guess he has happy memories of playing in the snow with his brother when they were little.
But it's also a blank canvas. I'm just looking at the last couple pages. Yes. You know, he's very much making his own footprints across this blank canvas. And he's, again, an artist with a blank page maybe, but he's really kind of forging his own path. But he's starting anew and kind of cleansing himself. It is this sort of blank tablet. Cale, what do you think of the epilogue?
I thought that it was very key to kind of just rounding him out more as a character, because he definitely went through this whole journey, and he's now, like, you know, as a grown up, you look back at yourself in the past, and then you're like, oh, I'm a completely different guy. You know, it's just like, I found it also very relatable because, yeah. You know, like my long-term relationship at that time in like the early 2000s and mid 2000s, I was a different guy then. Like, I feel like I've come so far from that person that I can't quite relate to that person as much, you know? And, you know, like, I feel like I have more of a grown-up attitude, and it's like the death of innocence as well, you know, like we're just mm-hmm. like, okay, I feel like I can handle things like, you know, jealousy or just relationship things a little bit better, you know, even like dealing with breakups and stuff, because I, you know, I've had relationships, many relationships afterwards, that I can deal with breakups a little bit better. I can, like, just be a more mature human.
I'm biting my tongue
because
I've been with you through so many of these breakups, so I'm just biting my tongue.
I know, you made a comic about it. It was so good.
You and I have both held each other's hands through many turbulent times where we have sworn to change our ways and to learn from our mistakes. So,
hey, it eventually worked out, right? Just try and
yes,
try again.
We both have had happy endings. That is true. I don't love this epilogue. I'm glad the two of you do like it, but, like, I don't want to see him as a grown up. I like that we end things with him kind of deciding to move on. Then I like that it kind of ends a bit more open ended. I mean, even this epilogue it's chapter 9 and it's called Footnotes. So it does, to me, even that chapter title makes it feel like it is kind of tacked on. I like the ending that he decides to, I don't know, or I guess Footnotes comes even after. Yeah, there's a bit of a transition, and I like this ending where he burns all the drawings and everything that Reyna's given to him, and then then we see Reyna is painting over that mural in her room that he painted for her. I don't know if I need to see him as a bit of a more mature adult looking back. This whole book is him looking back as a more mature adult. I think it's already has that framing. You know, it's nice to know that his brother turned out okay, because there were some issues when they were growing up. They were abused by a babysitter. It's nice to know that they both kind of made it out and turned into functional adults. But I don't know. It feels to me like the story kind of ends more logically with him as a young man deciding to move on from Reyna. I could just do without that epilogue. I think the stuff that I like in the epilogue is when he does flash back to him as a teenager kind of reflecting. I think that would have been maybe a more powerful epilogue for me, was him a couple months later, or maybe only like a year later, when he first comes home after being away in college and finds the quilt and reflects back. But I think it does contextualize everything, but I do think the overarching context is already there just from the fact that he made this as a 30-year-old man, or 30-something-year-old man. Anything else about the writing that you want to mention, Elaine?
Well, just that it's a powerful depiction of the perversion of Christianity in America and the ways in, like, it's very classist. So, like, Craig's family is poor and he feels like God looks down on him for it, which is completely at odds with Jesus's teachings from the Bible, but fits with the way America and American Christians treat their poor. And I'm more convinced every day that none of them have actually read the Bible.
Wow. I don't. Religion is not part of my identity. I do enjoy reading these books where it is part of someone's identity. I have a note here about the writing, just how honest and relatable it is. And the fact that it is him writing and drawing, I feel like this is the closest we can get to telepathy. Like, I really do feel reading this story that I'm experiencing the world through the eyes of someone else who has a different world experience to me. But Elaine, like, is religion part of your self-identity?
No, like, I was raised Catholic, but I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm religious now. I think, like, Christianity gets a bad rap, unfortunately, and so that's one reason I, like, distanced myself from it. And I'm not sure when that first was, but when I first began to question my religion, but And also, I should clarify, my upbringing was nothing like Craig's. It wasn't as evangelical. It was a lot more laid back. So anyway, when I first began to question my religion, may have been around the time I stumbled across the work of Jack Chick online. I was about 12. And so here is this like series of absolutely hateful comics. And although I didn't personally know any Christians like Jack Chick, it didn't do my heart good to know that they existed.
I'm not familiar with him. Can you give us a quick rundown of the kind of work that he did?
So he did these like little black and white comics that are called Chick Tracts, and they're just like these little mini comics essentially that people leave at bus stops and such. And so they go into things like how Dungeons and Dragons is satanic and rock and roll music is satanic and all that sort of thing. And they're actually banned in Canada as hate literature.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Kale is, I mean, growing up, Kale, in your family, is religion part of your identity, your family's identity? Is it a big thing?
It is, at least for my mom. So this is interesting because Craig is in an evangelical family, right? And so that's his background. And my sister was evangelical for a long time. I don't think she is anymore. But I got a glimpse of that world through my sister, which was kind of scary and weird. Because I was never religious, but I mean, I my parents are Buddhists, and they have been, you know, they are really religious in the sense that they pray often, and like I know the scripture of Buddhism pretty well from my time, you know, because I used to go to Sunday school and things like that. So I mean, I don't know if I would call myself atheist right now, but I'm more of like agnostic, if anything. Like, I don't really think about religion that much. And Buddhism is a little bit different from Christianity as well, because it's more flexible, and it's just like, it's more about the inner workings versus like going out, you know, and praying to God to get things in return and then things like that. So it's very different. My sister, she went through like a tough time during her high school and college years, and then she found religion through evangelical teachings, and so then she just kind of leaned heavily into it. And you know, it's I find that the evangelical church is very strict, not very flexible. It's the complete opposite of the way we kind of grew up with Buddhism. So yeah, I understand the reasons why people go into religion in such a hardcore way, but it's just like, you know, it's nothing that I can quite identify with, in the sense that I'm like, I would never do that, you know, because I've got, I think in more of a logical way. And so
it's fascinating to see that, you know, because it was such a strong part of Craig's identity in this book, that he had to come out to his parents as a non-Christian and had to announce that he no longer is going to practice and doesn't subscribe to a lot of their beliefs. And when this isn't something that you think about or isn't something that you identify or is part of your identity, then you don't have to tell someone, this isn't me. I just, again, I love comics where someone is going on a journey, experiencing something that I will not experience because of my life circumstances. And this book just really transports me there. I want to transition to the art, because I think the art, as I said, it's beautiful. It's very lyrical. It's very figurative instead of literal. And it just really does transport me into his emotional state. You know, we've got all these wonderful, wonderful images of, you know, he wants to burn, and he wants to, you know, purge himself of this desire to draw. And like, his head is just kind of turning into flames almost, and the pen strokes and the brush strokes are just kind of bleeding and smudging, and his head is just, it looks like, you know, you caught him in a photograph and he's moving too fast. There's images of him and Reyna in these different panels from the quilt, and he does this really beautiful connection between quilting and comic book cartooning, creating comic books, you know, one panel at a time, one segment of quilting at a time. He fills the panels with character and action, and then he'll have like this blank empty panel, you know, the first time Raina and Craig are reunited after being separated, they're just floating on the page, and it's just white all around them. There's no panel border. He takes away panel borders. He dissolves panel borders. There's this wonderful scene here where Raina's on the phone to him, and you know, she's telling him how much she misses him, and the panel of her in the phone booth is kind of cut, almost like as if it's cut and torn out of the page, and it's at a weird tilt, and it cuts through the speech balloon. It cuts off her words a little bit. There's just so much going on. I mean, I could just go through and point out the things that I love. Elaine, how do you feel about this art? What is it that, you know, is there anything particular or any images that jump out at you or stick in your mind?
Yeah, like every time I read or even flip through it, it makes me want to draw.
That's amazing.
And like, yeah, obviously some things I took as inspiration for Look Straight Ahead. So like the occasional shifts in art style and the occasional chaotic page layouts and distorted panel borders to signify discontent, and the dry brushing, although I didn't go as far with that as he does. And did you know he does that all with a Pentel pocket brush? I don't even know how you dry brush with one of those.
So that's one thing I was wondering. It's all the same brush for everything?
Apparently, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, one thing that I really noticed, like, he does that sort of dry brush, so it's where it looks like, you know, the brush has just lost its ink, and it's just, they're broken up, and you see, you know, the texture of the page kind of bleed through, because it's not a fully inked, you know, he doesn't have the ink that you need to really, really make that thick, strong line. But one thing, I don't know if either of you noticed this, but especially the scene where he kind of first comes face-to-face with Raina, there's this lovely panel where they're kind of mirroring each other. They're both kind of tucking hair back behind their ears, but he's done in a very dry, very rough brush, but she is still done in this very smooth, very solid, very deliberate line. And I really like this scene because I can imagine him, and maybe it's this kind of struggle that Elaine was speaking to about, you know, how do you depict yourself? And maybe he just wanted to draw himself as fast as possible, or maybe the dry brush was kind of a reflection of how sort of awkward he felt as a young man in this moment. But I just like the care and attention that he gave to this drawing of Raina. And I think for most of the time when he draws Raina, she is drawn in this very smooth, deliberate line. Even when the scenes around her are a bit more chaotic and a bit more scratchy, it's just this beautiful image in my mind of him just really slowing down and being very patient and deliberate when he draws her. I think it's just a very beautiful tribute to Caesar.
Another thing I really like is how he's not always beholden to, you know, the rules of perfect human anatomy. It's often quite distorted. And I love that. It's so expressive.
Yeah, there's scenes where the dad is yelling at him and his brother, and the dad just becomes gigantic and monstrous and really just kind of towers over them. And yeah, he changes the character design quite a bit. There's one chapter where all of a sudden the Craig character's nose becomes very rectangular, very sharp edges, almost as if it was kind of like maybe a Muppet character. It just looks like a tacked on triangle or a pyramid on top of his face. And then he kind of abandons that as he moves on. But he's not afraid to really, yeah, kind of stretch and pull and morph his characters. Kale, what's your impression of the art? Are there any images that really jumped out and stuck with you?
Yes, especially, you know, what made me buy this book was the art where he and his brother are playing in the woods, and they're using their imagination, you know, and also that panel where his brother gets put in the closet, or a tiny like a crawling space.
Yeah, the cubbyhole.
The cubbyhole, yes. And the cool art of like the it looks like, you know, a monster's mouth that mm-hmm. you know is in there, and like is, I guess it's just like their mattress that they put in there. So yeah, those are the things that I really like. I like the leaps into kind of fantastical art in this book, that kind of, you know, especially from a child's point of view on like, you know, something happening where you're going into some, like, you know, a strange situation, your imagination kind of runs away with you. And a lot of these fantastical leaps they take in the book are usually around maybe the way he feels about Reyna, or especially around the imaginative games that he played with his brother.
Yeah, it's just the games come to life. You know, he's imagining, him and his brother imagining their bed is like a pirate ship, I think. And then, you know, suddenly waves start crashing into the panels. But, you know, I just like how he approaches every page as an opportunity to really think about the storytelling. You know, if there's isolated panels, like his brother gets locked up in that cubbyhole, but then there's a panel of its on its own. It's separated from all the other panels. There's this wide gap, and it's kind of floating on its own, isolated, as the brother's just kind of collapsing at the door, begging to be let out. But it just separates him so much more from the rest of the scene and the other characters. If he falls or gets hurt or there's an emotional moment, it is just kind of pulled away, and there is this sort of widening gutter. The gap between the panels is just expanded. But then there's these moments where the panel borders disappear, when him and Reyna are lost in each other and just kind of drifting in and out, and the panels kind of morph into, you know, this kind of montage where the back of Craig turns into another back of Craig, and then she kind of leans down, and then there's this large image of Reyna kind of going through the panel, but it's all just kind of one image bleeding together. I see a lot of similarities in what you did, Elaine, in Look Straight Ahead. You know, we've got not only an adolescent boy dealing with feelings of isolation during winter, but you do a lot of this kind of figurative sort of poetic drawing. You know, when Jeremy, your main character, sees his crush Aaron for the first time, he literally turns into a puddle and kind of melts. And you shift panels and you play with panel size and shake things up. There's this wonderful scene in Look Straight Ahead where Jeremy falls and hits the ground and the panel cracks and breaks and the page is almost shattering. But what I like about what Craig Thompson does and what you do, Elaine, is it's very deliberate. Kayla and I discussed Batman Arkham Asylum on one of our earlier episodes, and the art style is shifting so much, and like the medium is shifting so much. And you mentioned that Craig Thompson used the same brush pen, but it still feels cohesive in the way that you and Thompson both do it. Even when you are changing things, it still exists in the same universe. Even when things get really kind of exaggerated and poetic, you know, it still feels like it's part of the same story. And I don't like it when cartoonists really change up the art style, but also change up the medium. It's just too much. It's too much shifting. And I like that even when things kind of go very kind of chaotic in this story and in your book, it still all feels intentional, and it is connected.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course. I'm a big fan of Look Straight Ahead. It's awesome. Kale, have you read Look Straight Ahead recently, right?
That's correct. Yeah, in prep for this episode, I like the fact that you linked it, Matt, how you know, the art takes that kind of ethereal quality. It's beautiful, and I found that, yeah, it fit the story and the character too. Oh my gosh, it, you know, you mentioned that scene where he melts, and I thought that was like so funny. And that's, you know, as a teenager, you definitely feel that, right? Like I remember I was relating to, again, my life and my like high school crushes and stuff. And yeah, when, you know, they show up in the room and you have to talk to them, especially when you're like grouped together in like, you know, a group project, you're just like, oh, you just feel just like this huge conflict within you, you know, where you're just trying to be cool, but you know, you can't be yourself. And I love that how you know,
didn't you feel like that was your chance? Like, you know, fate was smiling on you, like, oh, you've been partnered up with your crush. Like, oh my gosh, okay, this is my chance. I'm going to really impress her in this science project.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, I get to talk to her, you know? Yeah. So I really do love this book.
Going back to the art of blankets, Elaine, anything else you want to mention about the art? Because I've got a few things I want to say about lettering, but I want to make sure we finish up with the art first.
So I wrote down here, pages 474 to 475 look almost exactly like Saskatchewan highways, except for the strip of trees. And also, the winter landscapes remind me a lot of Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I love Calvin and Hobbes. But I think, now that you mention that, like, I think Calvin actually says it. Like, he does kind of treat snow as this sort of blank canvas, whether that's for him and Hobbs to go on an exploration and have an adventure, or if it's for him to create his monstrous snowmen and his snowman house of horrors. But he does treat the snow as this sort of invitation for, you know, stories and art. So I definitely see that connection. Kale, anything about the art before we move on to lettering?
There's one section in like page 479 that I wanted to kind of go over, where he meets up with Reyna one last time. This is with her parents and stuff. And, you know, like I found that, like, you know, his idolization of Reyna as a person is kind of encapsulated even more during this final meetup, right? And it's kind of like a bittersweet situation because, you know, when I was reading this book, I didn't know how it was going to end. Right, like when I was first reading this book, and I was just like, "Oh, these kids are gonna make it,"
and then that's how I met my wife.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm like, "Oh, come on, you know these kids are gonna be fine." And then it's just like, "Oh, this is the end. This is like where things kind of take a downturn." And so, I just love the bittersweet way he kind of encapsulated her, even in like page 482. Where, you know, she's saying goodbye for the last time. She's kind of highlighted, you know, in the perfect way that it kind of remembers her. You know, I think when our relationships end and stuff like that, we also kind of view a certain person a certain way for, you know, the rest of our lives. And this is one of those things where you're like, oh, yeah, I remember the good times, you know, and the type of person that she was. And so, yeah, this feels like this is kind of like his way of doing it through his art.
There's a book that I want to get you to read for this podcast, Kale. I don't know. Elaine, have you read Clumsy by Jeffrey Brown?
No.
No, but it's very similar to this. It's an autobiographical story of a relationship, and it's just all these little snippets. It's much more episodic, but it was one of the first graphic novels that I got my wife Emma to read. You know, I was like, okay, I think you'll like this one. You're not going to like superhero stuff. Try this one. And she was loving it. She was reading it. And then, you know, I was just kind of watching her read it. And I was like, hey, like, how far did you get? Did you get to the part where, spoiler alert, where they break up? And she goes, what? They break up? And I was like, well, he's not writing about his wife. And then she starts crying. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I do hope that we can cover that at one point, Kale. Have you tried to read this book, Kale?
I have not heard of it before, no.
Okay. Maybe Blankets is your gateway into Jeffrey Brown, Kale. But I want to just, Kale, the sequence you brought up where they're saying goodbye, the parents are awkwardly like making niceties and it's, you know, the parents are kind of handing them off as Craig's going home. But I love this sequence so much. He's got these three panels where he's saying, you know, her wind-wept hair kept obscuring her features, her face faded in and out of view. I love that, just thinking now how much we've spoken about how this is very much him thinking back and having this sort of perfect image in his mind. But even here, you know, he can't quite see her because her hair keeps going and obscuring her face. And I think maybe that's kind of very intentional there, this metaphor that, you know, even as a young man, he didn't quite see her. He only got glimpses of her. He only got little snippets of what he saw. But I just love this sequence where he says goodbye and then we've got this very high up view of the two cars pulling out of this parking lot and driving away. But then the next page, the car he's in with his mom just drives off the edge of the earth. This kind of like, you know, the earth just kind of ends and he falls into clouds. And I just love this feeling, like this weightlessness sort of, he said goodbye to the love of his life and he drives away and he has no control. He's not, his mom is taking him away. And it just feels like he's tumbled off the side of the earth. And I love it. One thing that I just thought was interesting is at no point does he ever do bleed art. There's no black ink that goes all the way to the edge of the page. He'll do lots of scenes where there's no panel border and the characters are kind of walking in snow. And the white, obviously, the white of the page goes all the way. And the image kind of bleeds. But there's no black ink that ever goes to the edge of the page.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never noticed that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you are making notes about a book and then things that you would never notice before kind of jumps out at you.
I think there is some in Chunky Rice. There's a bit of bleed art. It's a difficult thing to format in pre-press. And I think that's why sometimes people don't do it.
Well, I very much shied away from it. And then my first kind of full length complete graphic novel, You're Stuck With Me Now, I did have near the second half of the book, there's more and more bleeds. And it was a bit of a nightmare and just really sending it, getting it back from the printer and having to really reformat. And I ended up drawing and extending characters and adding arms and like limbs that weren't there because it kept getting cut off. And I realized I needed more art that wasn't going to be seen because it was going to be cut off by the printer. But yeah, it is a bit of a technical nightmare, but it is interesting that the only bleed really is the white kind of just extending. Lettering. I just want to point out some things that I thought was really kind of interesting with the lettering. There's some really nice moments when he's a bit younger at one of the first church camps that he goes to. He's bullied and he kind of runs and hides, and he's kind of comforted by the sound of the furnace. And there's this lovely hum sound effect. But it literally on the page is comforting and enveloping him and kind of wrapping him up like a blanket. And so the sound effect is just kind of curving around his kind of huddled body. He's almost in the fetal position as this hum is just kind of pressing down on him like a comfort blanket. And then I love this scene where Raina and Craig, they're talking to each other and they're talking over each other at the same time. They share a speech balloon. So there's two tails pointing at each of them, or one tail pointing at each of them. So one balloon, two tails. But their words are mixing and matching, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, like, oh, hi, and they're both talking over each other. I thought it was a really cool way of, you know, expressing this excited teenage talk where they're both speaking at the same time, and they're showing that by mixing their words together. And I love the scene when he first goes to visit Raina, and Raina's dad is driving him and Raina home for the first time. They haven't seen each other since camp, and Raina's dad is talking, and he's got speech balloons. But Craig's narration is plastered on top of the speech balloons and kind of drowning the dad out. And it really, you know, yes, there's background noise of the dad talking, but neither of them are listening. They're both stuck in this moment of being reunited. And, you know, it just kind of creates this sort of background hum of dialogue.
A last bit, you know, because you mentioned Raina's dad and, you know, the scene where he's saying goodbye to all the kids because he's heading out for the night. Mm-hmm. And I felt so sad reading that point. Like, it's like the breakup of his relationship, right? And like Ben isn't talking to him anymore. And he just feels like really, really like depressed. And it's just, you know, like there's this, I think there's an image of Raina's dad and mom like on vacation in a tropical place and stuff like that. Just like those memories are still there, you know, and maybe that also is kind of like foreshadowing the what's going to happen in this book is, you know, later on to Craig and Raina.
Do you think he kind of added that as maybe a bit of a foil or counterbalance to, okay, yes, breakups are hard when you're 17, but oh my gosh, they're really hard when you're in your 40s and you've got kids.
Yeah.
And maybe this is sort of him admitting that like there are people who are going through real trauma and real, I don't know.
I think trauma is trauma. You know, when you're older, if you have kids, you're basically leaving a complete life behind versus, you know, someone that you're kind of obsessed with, right? So there's still that emotional baggage and emotional like disconnection that has to happen. But it's a very complex argument that he makes in this book.
I'm just looking really quick at that sequence where the dad is kind of leaving the house, but he comes and he's wandering through the house and he's calling and no one's answering him. And he goes inside Raina's bedroom and he catches them lying in bed together. They're spooning. And this was after, I think, they spent the night together for the first time. And the dad doesn't say anything and he just kind of closes the door and leaves them. And then he's left alone with his own memories. But this is such an interesting choice. Like, do you think this actually happened? Is there any way that like the dad later told Raina, like, oh, by the way, when your boyfriend was here, I saw you guys sleeping in bed together. And then she told Craig and then he put it in his book. Or is this a fabrication? Is that a strange thing to fabricate? I don't know. Elaine, do you think this is an actual event?
I wondered about that too, but yeah, like you said, the dad could have told Raina, who could have told Craig. I'm not sure. It's unclear.
I think that scene would be an interesting scene. Like, oh my God, dad, what? Like, what if that happened? I don't know. If that scene happened between the dad and Raina, I would like to have seen that scene. But I don't know. Kale, do you think this was like an actual literal event that happened?
Yeah, I don't think it happened in the same way. Maybe it's maybe to possibly symbolize some kind of consent that had, you know, from Reyna's parents. Maybe, you know, I was thinking maybe it was just like Reyna's dad was just like, I don't know, maybe he was kind of checked out.
Yeah, it's just a weird shift in perspective that it's not the two main characters, it's someone else observing the two main characters asleep in a way that they shouldn't have been aware of. I don't know, it did jump out. There's a bit of leaps of logic in the perspective choices that he makes. I think in service of the story, but it does make you question how much of it is truthful and factual and literally happened. Yeah. So anything, any other notes, any other things you want to mention, Elaine, about this book in particular?
So I guess I should have mentioned back in the part where we were talking about religion, the homophobia of a lot of Christians was another thing that turned me off of it. And so again, like around age 13, I'd begun to make some really good friends online because nobody in the real world wanted to be my friend in this one chat room, which had quite a large queer contingent. And so like, I didn't like the idea that my friends were going to hell because of who they loved. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of homophobia in the book. He's teased on, quite a bit.
Yeah. There's that. And then, on page 516, when he's talking to the pastor, I think, and he's telling him about, or asking him what he's going to go to university for. And he's telling him, don't go to art school because I know this guy who went to art school and became gay because he went to a life drawing class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You. That's not good.
But I mean, like Craig in the scene has this, he's almost looking right at the reader. Is kind of, it's like almost like something out of The Office where he's just kind of looking at the office like,
whoa? Yeah, like I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah. But they're just so sincere when they're telling him that.
I know. Yeah. The blanket also appears in Chunky Rice and Habibi.
Oh, the same quilt.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Habibi. How would you describe Habibi? It's long. It's quite epic.
I don't know. I didn't really like it. I was quite let down because I loved Blanket so much and I was excited to read more comics by him. But it's really rapey and it's kind of racist and I don't know.
I know there is a very conscious sort of, I don't know even how to describe it, but it is becoming more and more of a topic of conversation of people telling their own stories and stories from their culture and not co-opting other cultures.
Yeah.
And in Habibi, he moves from Blankets, his very much his own experience, his own cultures, and he's telling this sort of, it's not strictly Islamic because it doesn't, and it's not really tied to any one actual real country, so it is this sort of kind of very heavily influenced by Middle Eastern Islamic culture, but it's not any, he's not saying where it takes place specifically, I think.
It's not even clear what time period it takes place in.
Yeah.
Because I think it's supposed to be modern day, but like, does he seriously think the Middle East is all still sultans and harems, you know? So like,
yeah, it is this sort of time out of time. So
yeah.
But it's interesting because he, and I think maybe he was trying to figure out what the next project was, because he goes from this story, which feels to me, Blankets feels, I mean, it is a very long project. It covers most of his life. Maybe, you know, it feels like he's kind of gotten everything out. He's talked about his family. He's talked about his religion. He's talked about his first love. He's talked about where he is now as an adult. And, you know, maybe he just had to go to this sort of fantastical world influenced by a culture completely removed from his own. But I don't know if I necessarily agree with this blanket statement, that you can't tell stories from other cultures. And I don't know if it's good enough for him to make it a land out of time and an unspecified land. Does that give him enough leeway to kind of pick and choose what happens there? I don't know. It is a conundrum talking about Habibi. Kale, have you read Habibi?
I have not, no. I just learned about him while I was researching for this episode.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's if we cover Habibi, it is going to be difficult to kind of to work out, you know, how to discuss it. I don't know if I would recommend Habibi necessarily for people who do like blankets. I don't even know if I would recommend Chunky Rice to people who like blankets. I do think those books are different enough. You know, the art style is very lovely and beautiful because that's his drawing style. But I feel like he's left it all on the page in blankets, and you're not necessarily going to get any more shades of him as a person if you read those other graphic novels. Elaine, how would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think they're all very, very different books. And then another book of his that I have, but I have never finished reading, is Space Dumplings, which was a Scholastic book. And yeah, the art is really, really beautiful, but I just sort of couldn't connect with it.
I think that's more of an all ages one, right? It's a fantasy and sci-fi sort of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you read Carnet? You did read Carnet de Voyage, right?
I have read it, but a long time ago. I didn't reread it for this episode.
I would recommend this as a companion piece to Blankets. It is sort of a behind the scenes, you know, I think of it like a DVD extra. Once he finished Blankets, this is kind of him taking the book on tour in Europe and in the Middle East. Again, talking about what drawing means to him, and it's also kind of a really cool glimpse into the life of a cartoonist, you know, going from event to event. I do highly recommend Elaine's work, though. As I said many times, if you connect to Blankets, if you want another very truthful, very heartfelt exploration of adolescence, but also just very honest and very imaginative, evocative storytelling, check out Elaine's book. Elaine, what's the easiest way to get Look Straight Ahead?
You can actually still read it online for free. I've left it online as like sort of a way of giving back, because I know, like, as a self-published book, it's difficult to procure a physical copy. So you can read it at lookstraightahead.thecomicseries.com.
And we will share links, but also I encourage, if you can seek out a copy, but it's on Comixology as well.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
you can. You can buy and own a copy. Elaine, you're working on a new series called Last Band on Earth. What can you tell us about that?
So I sort of consider that a spiritual sequel to Look Straight Ahead.
Oh, cool.
It's a story about mental illness, although even it takes the metaphor further than Look Straight Ahead did. So it's about this group of characters who are in a noise rock band called the Dead Layaways, and they are trapped in this sort of semi-post-apocalyptic city that's run by demons, and they're trying to find a way out so that they can go on tour because they're a band.
And when do you expect this to be finished?
So I actually just received a grant to continue working on it, and the deadline that I set for myself for that was July 2022.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes.
Comics, man, they take forever to make.
Yes, and you can follow along with me as I make it on my Patreon.
Yeah, so give us the Patreon address, and we'll link it with this episode.
So it's patreon.com/cuckoosnestpress.
Yeah, and awesome.
So $1 a month gets you monthly wallpaper and coloring pages and like some other miscellaneous sketchbook type posts. And then $5 a month gets you everything. So every new thing I'm working on, you can download Last Band Number 1 and another book I made last year called The Cuckoo's Nest Press Bestiary, which is a collection of drawings of cryptids and mythical creatures.
Nice. I awesome. Really love your style. I've been a fan of your work since Mark contacted me about doing a pinup for Arcade, the graphic novel you and Mark teamed up on, where it's a Viking video game character who slowly becomes aware that he's a video game character, but his cartridge is being corrupted and has to team up with all the other characters to survive this corroding cartridge. But yeah, check out Elaine's work. We will share the links online. Kale, where can people find us online?
You can find us online at Matt and Kale Read Comics on Facebook and Instagram. You can find us at Matt and Kale Read on Twitter. And then, of course, you can email us at mattandkalerc@gmail.com.
And all of our episodes are available at mattandkale.com or wherever you get your podcast. Please go ahead and subscribe. Please do rate and review us. It just takes a few minutes and it does make a big difference. We're trying to grow and expand our audience. And if you're someone who enjoys this podcast and you know some other comic book fans that would enjoy this podcast again, please share, you know, send them your favorite episode. Or if you know someone's a fan of one of the graphic novels, send them that episode. We're going to keep doing this no matter what, but we do like hearing that more and more people are kind of discovering and joining in the conversation and listening to what we have to say. Elaine, thank you so much for joining us. This was really fun. It's always just kind of cool to add someone new to the mix. Good luck with finishing The Last Band on Earth. Listeners, I do want to say that in 2 weeks, we have another guest who is a good friend of Elaine and a good friend of Mark, another Saskatchewan cartoonist, Ryan Howe. We're going to be talking about Batman Mad Love, a fantastic graphic novel. All right, thanks so much. We'll see you in 2 weeks for Batman Mad Love.